afternoon, Walleye.
Hi, John. This is Brent Kelly again.
Yeah, fine.
Are we okay?
Time. I had a couple of things that I have to do.
Okay. Well, yeah, and still, if this is not a good time, I'll be happy to call at another time.
Well, that's all. I can give you some time, 10, 15 minutes.
Okay, that shouldn't take that time. Well, maybe. What I'll do, well, first, I write for a... I'm primarily a veterinarian, but I write for a magazine called Sports Collectors Digest, and they publish interviews usually two or three a month, and a man wrote me, said he was a fan of yours when he was a little boy, and did I know if you were still alive, and if so, could I contact you? So I guess you're still alive. You sound alive. It wasn't your funeral.
Yeah, but listen, do you live in Lexington?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Because I got some people that... are from town. They work for Toyota people.
Uh-huh, that's just right down the road.
Huh?
That's just right down the road.
Yeah, the fellow's name is Michael DaPrill. He's one of the officials there.
I don't know. How do you spell that?
D-A-P-R-I-L-E.
And he's an executive of Toyota?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's a big shot. They go to Japan, and he represented the people on TV and all that stuff when they were talking about cars and stuff.
Oh, boy. Well, he must be pretty big. A friend of mine used to have the Toyota dealership for the country of Jamaica. He's a Jamaican.
Uh-huh.
And that when his family's company decided they were going to have a automobile dealership, they researched every car in the world and decided that Toyota was the best manufactured, best made, best running car in the whole world. And that's when normally they decided to sell.
That's right, because we have a Chinese pastor. He came in from China. His father just passed away, and they ran out by doing the communism, and he built a Chinese church up here, and he told us that the best car is built is a Toyota by the Japanese people.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's one of...
Hey, who is this fellow that's inquiring?
Let me find his... let me find it. Goodness gracious. He wrote...
A long time, since 1946 and 47.
Yes, sir. Jonathan Fine, F-I-N-E. He was, you know, I don't know how old he was. He said he was a little boy when he saw you play. And he subscribes to the magazine I write for and evidently wanted to find out if you were still around. What I'll do is ask you, I don't know, 10 or 12 questions or so, and if you would please just answer whatever. If you don't want to answer something, don't answer.
No, go on.
Okay, you were 25 years old when you came to the majors. How long had you been in the minors and where had you played?
Well, actually, I played only 3 years in the minors. The first of all, actually, I played 1 year when they sold me. I came up in 1936. I was sold to a major league ball club at the time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
To the Washington Senators.
Uh-huh.
Sure. And, see, that happened after our season at AAA. And what happened, I got a bonus, and this kid, Caber, didn't want to pay me any money, but after all, I got it, and I said, the hell with it, I'm going home. Because, like anything else, I'm making $300 a month, and $1,100 we got the signed bonuses. It kept me, and I hit .339 my first year, and out of Albany, I was with a bunch of old men, see,
mm-hmm.
back then, 1936. So I was just 21 years old at the time, and at those days, you couldn't sign a contract because I signed a contract in 35, and your father had to sign. You had to be 21 years of age.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I thought it was 18 back then, too.
Hell no.
I'll be darned.
So anyway, he kept $1,000, give me $100, but I had 39. They farmed me out to Trenton. First of all, we had fellows that must have been 30 to 35 up there in that AAA ball club, Shanny Hogan and stuff like that. And I was just a kid when you come right getting out of home in New Jersey. And it turns out that they shipped me to Chattanooga. Well, as fate would have it, I got stuck in Cincinnati. They just built a new railroad station in Cincinnati, not too far from the ballpark, Crosley Field.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to sleep 2 days in damn Pullman because we couldn't get out of town.
Oh, boy.
Flood.
Yeah.
So anyway, I got to Chattanooga, and the ball club just left for Nashville. And then the owner at the time, he said, oh, no, we're going to keep it down here, work out with several other ball players that are here. Joe Engel. And it turns out, I stayed there for a week. At the first day, they said, well, you've got to eat at this hotel. We'll give you your food. And I saw cholera, greens, and beets. So I said, shit, we used to feed the pigs with that. So I stayed there for a week, and then when the ball club, Clyde Milam was managing, and they played with a fastball at 40, worked 40, 97 or some damn thing. and they had a flood down there too, and it turned out that, hell, I was hitting the ball over. Then they said, well, you sign a contract for $7,500 down here and let the AAA club give the other money. I said, nope. I signed for $150 here, half, and they're going to give me half. I wasn't born yesterday that they're going to be holding up and I'm going to be living halfway. So it turns out that when I worked out and they told me, no, they wouldn't do it, I said, the hell with you then. I'm going to go back to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where all the kids that I knew, my age, were playing.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns around, a damn ballpark was washed down with that three-mile thing is down there now. All that, those three smokestacks that were contaminated everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to York, and from York we went to Trenton. So I finished hitting 339, and then at the end of the year I went up to Washington. Mr. Griffith said, sign a contract for 1937 for $200, take a $100 cut, and you can finish the season up here. I go, to hell, I'm going back home, and I make for anywhere from $400 to $500 playing semi-pro ball,
right,
which I did. And then what happened, instead of signing a contract with Major League Ball Club, I don't know how the hell they negated the deal, see, because they bought me, and it was Judge Branham or somebody. At that time, I didn't know too much about rules and regulations at the time. And I said, hell, it's a depression, and so I'm not going to be kissing anybody's fanny. And when I can make $500, you know, I can go down to South Carolina, North Carolina, and work in a mill, and their company will give my father a house and put him to work and all that stuff, and they give you, you say, you can live here all your life and play ball for the damn company. I didn't have to work, just play ball. So anyway, that was the start. And then what they did, and I finished with three more years that I put in, 36, 37, 38, in the minors. And then Joe Cabrera sold me to the Yankees. I was going out the gate, and we got down it, and I was sold to the Giants, and that didn't work out. And then I was going to go to County Mac, and next thing, Joe Cabrera said, no, we'll send you back to Washington.
Well, who owned you all this time? Nobody owned you? You were independent?
Joe Cabrera. See, because most of these ball clubs didn't own Bay minor leagues.
Right. They had agreements.
Joe
that's
Cabrera
all.
Owned them.
Okay.
So they could do it between the minors and the majors. But he said, what the hell? They just rip up the contracts like you and I would say, hey, okay, rip it up, and it's no deal.
Yeah.
So what the hell? But their baseball was different then.
Oh, yes.
Hell, they tell you, you got to sign for this or sign for that. But then I'm making $500 playing ball in the minors, see, from 300. And then I go back to the same ball club, and I got a $125 raise. Figure that out.
Yeah.
Turns out that then my third year I got 500, and after 3 years they turn around and says, well, we'll have to sell you somebody, everybody's asking for you. And Joe Cambria, he was from Baltimore, I had a Bugle Laundry, so he figured this way somebody will get me. Then I go back to Washington, and we got there and they sent me a contract for $500. I didn't sign it.
Well, Mr. Griffith was the cheapest person in the country.
No, he wasn't cheap. They didn't draw anybody.
Well,
they drew $200,000, and the ticket prices were only $2.
Yeah.
I know the highest expense, most expensive ball player at that time, when I joined that ball club, was Buddy Meyer, $7,500.
Oh, boy.
And I saw guys playing ball for, I finally went to spring training, but Joe Stripp was from Perth Amboy, not too far, so I went and worked out in his baseball school down there and didn't tell anybody I was in there. So then I waited till about a week before spring training to report to Orlando, and it turns out that I got into Angelbilt Hotel instead of with the other rookies. They bring in early and see who's they work out, and see who they're going to keep and send the rest of the minors.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't get any money. So I got back in there, and it turns out that I came in a week before they started, and Lord, I was in St. Augustine down there, and I come back, and they had some Cubans come in to work out too. Joe Cambridge brought some Cubans, and they were smoking the damn marijuana weed. They're running like little jackrabbits.
Oh, boy.
With straw hats, and it turns out that I saw these people, and I could smell that stinking cigarette. I didn't know it was marijuana. So it turns out that I come into camp, and nobody could pronounce my name. They give me a number 24, and about a week later, we start playing Detroit exhibition ball game. And there was a guy in the minors by the name of Harry Eisenstadt. He pitched for Detroit there.
Well, yeah.
He was up there a year ahead of me. Left-hand pitcher. Hell, I could hit him blindfolded. So it turns out, in the seventh inning, I get called in, and they couldn't pronounce the name. But there was another guy, Grilli, that almost sounded like Willi.
Yeah.
And it turns out he was running. He said, no, 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 we won 24. There were a couple men on base, and I got a base hit, tie up the ball game 3-1 in the bottom of the seventh, and they said, okay, go play right field. I replaced Sam West. And it turns out, it comes in the bottom of the ninth, the guy tripled, they walk two guys, and then I get a base hit to win the ball game.
That's a good start.
So that night, we go back to the Angerbilt Hotel, and it's Masterson, Bloodworth, Jay Gurley, and Joe Haynes, who married Thelma later on. And we're all sitting at the table, hungry as hell, because we had to walk to the ballpark about a mile and a half from the hotel. And you walk through the nigger shacks and stuff. It was shortcutting it.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns around. And for lunch, they gave you two pieces of white bread with one slice of cheese and a little damn milk. And I wouldn't eat either one of them. I said, the hell no, I don't want to clutter up my eyes. I'd go take a grapefruit and eat that damn thing, skin and all. So anyway, that night, Mylan came up to the dining room, came to our table. He said, how do you pronounce your name and this and that? And when he got through talking, I told him, you go to a well, get a drink of water for half of it, and AJ's like an eye and stuff like that. So before he left, he said, good game and all that. And he said, you're making a trip with the big club tomorrow to Detroit, to Lakeland. And right away, when they left, boy, all those guys said about them, boy, you're going to make this ball club. You go back. They make a long story short, so they had Bobo Newsom pitching out there. And I started in left field. And it turns out, when I go to bat, they had me leading off. Bobo Newsom is pitching, and Bucky Harris and Sam West and some of the others says, well, he's going to throw you a change of pace on the first pitch. He thinks you're a greenhorn, that you're going to swing so hard and all that. So they knew I had two balls to left field. They shipped it to Greenberg about 15 feet away from first base. He threw that damn change of pace out there. And I hit a ground ball down the right field line for triple.
Oh, boy.
They lost their short. I wind up 3-for-5 and had a hell of a day. So we go back to the hotel, and Thelma, the adopted daughter, she was a niece by marriage. I mean, the niece officially.
Mm-hmm.
He adopted her, Calvin, and Bruce, but Brucey died young. So it turns out, Thelma came over to me, and she was a doll, too, when you come right down to it. And she gave you that drawl talk, you know, and she said, Unc would like to see you. Going that way. So I went up, took the elevator, went up to the suite up there where they were sitting, and he said, sit down. You have your contract with you? I said, yes, down in my room. He said, go get it. I went and got the contract. I looked at it, I gave it to him. He ripped the damn thing up.
Oh, boy.
So I said, well, I guess I better pack my bag and go home. So he drew another piece of paper out, and he put $600 a month. And I told him, I said, after I signed it, I said, Mr. Griffith, you know, the law is, after I played a couple of years, I found out that the law was that if you go to the majors from the minors, you're supposed to get a 25%
rate. Yeah.
And what the hell, I make it $300. So what the hell would he give me? $75 raise. And I told him, I said, Lord, just think, I might have been signing for $500 or $600 now if I played in 37, 38. He looked at me, he looked, he said, well, you got a point. I said, well, Mr. Griffin, let me explain to you. I said, heck, I used to make $500, $600 playing semi-pro ball around New York.
Mm-hmm.
And see, there is just like the ball players now. If you had a ball club in a league and I had a ball club, and if I had another ball club played against you, and you see me beating you, you know what the hell you're going to do? You're going to find out how much money I'm making because they had contracts, what they were paying the guy.
Right.
And then they give you the money under the table.
Mm-hmm.
You say, hey, you come to my club and I'll give you $50 a ball game to play. And it was funny, during Depression, I made $64. $60 for playing three ball games, rain or shine, in Lineport, Pennsylvania. And $4 for transportation, room, and board.
Wow.
And I played every damn ball. The only time I never got played a ball game, but that was one that I made sure I guaranteed because it was about 60 miles from home to go up there.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy said, sure. Well, we never lost a ball game to rain. We never had rain. So anyway, make a long story short, it was just like my father used to say, how the hell can you take and make money? And I was making money when I was even a freshman in high school, getting $5-$10 to play ball.
Yeah.
And then Somerville, our rivalry, he said I was getting paid. I said, Coach John, I'm not taking any money. I don't get any checks. I just go out there. I want to play ball, and I'm in high school because I played football, basketball, baseball, and he cuts basketball and baseball, and I was a thorn in his side, you know, trying to get me out of, you know, disqualify me. So anyway, it turned out that I used to take all everything cash, and it was fine. And then I played for Mrs. Dodge, who bought the Mets after, Madison. And there I got $30 to play up there. And I played a lot of professional ball players. And the thing that I had the advantage on a lot of people, I worked out in the polo grounds under Bill Terry for 2 years.
Boy, that had to help.
And then I worked for Bakelite, which is around about 5 miles from my hometown. I punched a clock, and I got $20 a ball game there. Punched Monday and Friday.
Well, that was a good situation. You used to be able to do that. Those teams don't exist anymore, and it's a shame.
Well, they are. There are some semi-pro ball teams in Carolina or somewhere. I think there's a league up there in Vermont, and now they go all the way up to Alaska.
Yeah, they've got a few. It's not the, well,
not as many as they used to.
Yeah, we've got the thing here. I coach a team here for boys. Most of the boys are college boys playing summer ball. But it's just not like it was. When I was growing up, I'm 50 years old. When I was growing up, I used to get $5 Saturday and $5 Sunday. I played for a team in high school. And again, it was a cat, just like you. They couldn't give me a check. But those situations aren't around here anymore.
Well, that's, you know, who kills it?
Who's that?
The goddamn baseball itself, the major leaguers.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't give a damn what they say. They look for an example. The International League, where I played for Montreal 50-51, 2 years in Toronto, when I got into the service after 1943, I left Philadelphia. I went to Connie Mack, and I said, Mr. Mack, send me back to Boston. See, because when I was in Washington for 3 years, Cronin wanted me, so he bought me for, Chase and I were traded for Wilson and, this left-hand outfield. He became a good hitter. They brought the fences in Washington. He since passed away. And it was a Boston deal. And I go up there, and I have a good spring and everything else, and I'm supposed to play against left-hand pitching, and Finney is supposed to pitch against right, hit against right-handers.
Stan Spence.
Turns out that SOB put somebody else to play in there.
He put
Finney in there, put somebody else that was on a ball club at the time, and the guy struck out four times, and we were playing the Yankees, so we lost. And everybody in the clubhouse, from Williams, Dominic DiMaggio, Finney, and the pitchers that were pitching, and hell, they were saying, yeah, Dan, if we had you in a lineup, we would have won the ball game. Because a couple days before that, against the Boston Bees in Stengel, I had 3-for-5, hit a home run, drove in all the runs. And then I was married, and my wife said, look, we could have stayed in Washington instead of you sitting on a bench here like this, and you're not going to play. I told her the situation. And the money was all right, because what the hell, at that time, we got $5,000 to sign with Boston, too. They got a raise. And then all of a sudden, Cronin hears everybody moaning. Now, I'm keeping quiet. I didn't say much, because I was timid in a lot of places. So I said, well, I don't have anything to do with Cronin's the manager. And then Cronin come up and said something to me, and I just turned around and jumped on him. I said, look, I don't want to play ball for you. You lied to me. And anybody lies to me, I don't believe it. I said, I've been raised by nuns and stuff like that, and to be honest. So here's a guy, a Catholic. We go to St. Damn Church and all. So it turns around. He said, go see Eddie Collins. He must have told Collins. He says, well, see what the hell he can do. So it turns out that Eddie Collins says, see, what's the trouble? I told him the story I told you, and then all of a sudden Collins says, well, after we talked a while, he said, you think you can make a deal for yourself now? And the season started. So I looked at him and I said, may I use your phone? I must have shocked him. So I called Joe McCarthy and told him, call Mr. Weiss. And it wasn't about 15 minutes later, I'm a Yankee.
Oh, boy.
So they tell me, he said, the roster's loaded. Well, Mr. Weiss told me, he said, Tipton broke his ankle at Kansas City. Well, you go down there and play the only game, and then we're going to get another outfielder to come down there, and we're going to hide you. Henrik's going to go in the service, and then we'll bring you up here. What happened? We get down there, I play one game, and I don't play for 3 more weeks. And one SOB in Buffalo saw me play ball in Washington. I got 4-for-6, drove in 6 runs against the Philadelphia A's at the time. Won a ball game. And the Yankees sold Buffalo 3 ball players. And they were inducted into the service. So now that Stiglmeyer, may he rest in peace, he was a nice guy. So it turns out that he told the wife, he said, look, these guys were inducted. How about giving us that ball player, that Pollock that you're hiding down there in Kansas City? And, you know, Buffalo, Tonawanda, is nothing but about a couple hundred thousand Pollocks.
Right.
And it worked out very good for me because I went up there, I finished third in the league in hitting, second in stolen bases, and I hadn't played there. I think I got there in May sometime. So it worked out fine because I was out. And Bill Terry wanted to pay $50,000 for me to grab me. I said, no, Bill. I said, I got to be going to the service because my wife wasn't pregnant at the time. We didn't know it, that the damn doctor in Washington clamped her tubes. And
ooh.
It turned out my favorite too because she got pregnant, so I stayed one more year. After that year, who drafted me? I was hoping it was not St. Louis Browns or the Phillies or the A's that Connie Mack had first call, so they grabbed me. So I finished dodging the draft down in that damn thing, and it was just a mismatcher year for us.
Well, they drafted you before that season was over, didn't they? Didn't the Army get you before that season was over?
No, after the season was over in 43.
It was after the season? I thought it was during the season. Okay.
No, because I had 90 days stuff, and it was all on account of damn woman, because I went to visit my parents in Manville, which is 50 miles from Philadelphia. And that widow has four sons, none of them went in service. And she went down the board in Somerville and said, hey, how come that guy's not in the service?
Oh.
But my daughter was born on the 12th of October. The next day, I got the damn notice in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Oh, boy.
Report for induction. And I was just mulling over that, telling somebody here a couple days ago, that I saw my daughter when she was born. I was in the delivery room. And I had a report that notice told me I got an extension of 10 days. So I saw her for about, my wife didn't get out of the hospital till after 7 days because it was October 12th, it was cold as hell. And I didn't want to bring her at the place where we're staying with the people that have retired to have a kid and look around and run around.
Yeah.
So it turns out, and after the 10 days were up, I had a report to Des Moines, to Camp Dodge. And we went in there and I stayed there for about another week or 2 weeks. And then they turned around and sent me home. They said, well, you go home, and we'll call you after the first of the year. Hell, I never even could spend Christmas.
Hmm.
It was about December 18th. I had to get on a train and go out to Camp Roberts, California. And I spent 28 months overseas, so I figured I lost about 27 days to see my daughter grow up.
Wow.
Well, but it's fun because I'll tell you, I got a $10,000 GI insurance, and I get $800 to $900 interest on that money, and we paid it up in advance, so it worked out fine because I got to see New Caledonia, New Zealand, just off the boat, but then we went to New Guinea and the Philippines, so
uh-huh.
We had a good baseball year down there too.
You played ball?
Oh yeah, because I got into a headquarter company. Because John Kimbrough and I were in at a camp out there, and they kept up after 6 months of basic training at Camp Roberts. We sat 4 months out there at Fort Ord. And
jeez.
Finally we went in there and said, hey, come on, ship our ass out, because, you know, the war was coming to an end in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So we went in there, and I spent 44 out there, and then in the fall of 45, I came home in December.
Mm-hmm.
46, I went to play ball with Louisville because... What happened when I was sold to Boston? If I was smart at that time, but see, I was making $7,500 now,
mm-hmm.
and the GIs were guaranteed their salary. So they tell me, we'll take you back to Boston. I start thinking, all these ballplayers come out of the service, Williams, DiMaggio, Lindor, and whatnot, and others. I said, hell, I'm better off going to AAA.
Mm-hmm.
And see, the stigma against me was that I played A-ball and went to the majors. That was always, you didn't have enough experience. You didn't have enough
right.
experience. So anyway, make long story short, it turns out that we made $7,500. We played in the Little World Series. We got against Jackie Robinson. I'm in his book. And it turns out that had a hell of a year. Then
mm-hmm.
I went back there in 47. And next thing I know, my wife took a job in Washington. So D.C. working for... Veterans Administration, and our daughter was with there. I said, look, there's one place we're going to live. nation's capital, depression proof. And it turns out that while I was in Louisville, then the Red Sox sold me to Toronto. Now, this is pretty good. I got to go to Toronto. They said they got this, that. They sold me for two ball players, Bats and Doc Ellis. And it turns out, $50,000.
Wow.
The president, Hurley, Hurley, he was a newspaper man. He wrote me a letter. He says, look, this is what they did for you. So I got myself $5,000 bonus to go to Toronto.
How long did you play there?
2 years.
Okay.
I got $8,000 a year. So it turns out, Boston gave me $5,000. I stayed there 2 years. Then they traded me to Montreal. I stayed there 2 years. And I told Ricky, I said, shit, I don't want to go to your place. And they bought my youngest brother from retirement to play at Montreal. And the day before, in Montreal, I had a home run to beat Montreal. And it turns out, they come back in, and Austin told me, he says, oh, the reason you don't want to leave this damn Toronto, you got all the women tied up in this damn town. And you know what I told him? I said, speak for yourself. Kind of manager you are, I don't even want to take him play ball for you either.
Yeah.
I said, furthermore, I'm not coming in here. I said, till I talk to Mr. Ricky.
Yeah.
So then I got Mr. Ricky. They traded me for three ball players, and I said, the hell with that. So now I get $2,500 from him to go to Montreal. And that year we finished second, and the next year we won the pennant in Montreal in 1951, and we got beat by Milwaukee. And that was a good year. That's the best year I had in baseball as far as money's concerned. Because, you know, they take out 35% of your money on each dollar.
Mm-hmm.
In Canada at the time.
Yeah.
And I got paid in American money. So it turns out Racine owned the ball club. And the Dodger organization made so much money. The only club that didn't win a pennant that year in the Dodgers was the big club. They got beat by the Giants with Thompson's home run. Everybody else got a ring just like I have. Cost $70. That's worth today $5,000 because all gold and chip die, quarter chip diamond in it. But Racine gave us, they withheld $3,600 out of my pay. So I got all that. Then I came to the States, and the only income tax I had to pay was 20%, so I got another 16%.
Oh, what a deal.
And then I worked out when I got through, while I was playing in Canada, and playing for Washington Senators for 3 years, Mr. Griffith asked me if I'd scout for him, to scout the league for him instead of hiring somebody. I said, sure, Mr. Griffith. He said, we'll give you $500 to do it. I said, no, I'm doing it out of generosity that you gave me a chance. I live here. You invite me to your parties, birthday parties, November the 11th. And it turned around, we went to the party, and he says, and then before I quit playing ball, I was going to manage for the Dodgers because Austin was going up. He said, I want you to be my coach when I come up there. So Buzzy Bavese, I went up to New York, the Commodore Hotel, where we were going to go. I was going to manage Pueblo in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned around, Shaughnessy saw me from the International League, and Havana was coming into the league. So Shaughnessy said, you know the league, why don't you help Bobby Maduro? And I said, well, I was going to make $6,000 to go manage a ball club. So I told Buzzy, I said, Buzzy, you know what I'm going to tell him? That I want $12,000, send a check today for $2,000 to my wife, and I'll take the $10,000 as the pay.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Those people, Shaughnessy says he's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife gets a check for $2,000 instead of me going to Colorado. She said, what are you doing here? I got a check for $2,000. I said, take it. I'm getting $10,000 to go down to Cuba. So I said, that's $12,000. So then at the end of the year, we came in to the party, and he said, how about you coming to manage the ball club at Hagerstown? And that's where I had Bobby Allison a couple of balls. 1 year, and the thing folded. I went to Europe on a baseball clinic, and it turns out that I managed Erie, and then at Midland, I stayed at Midland. They brought me back and put me in the front office, and I've been in the front office ever since.
You've been employed by that franchise for a long time.
Well, let me tell you, I'm retired 8 years ago, and they said, you're spring training director, and do what the hell you want.
That's
so that's why I come out the ballpark, just like tell you to call here, or instead at home, I can talk here because it's a first aid room, and I sit here, read the papers, and get calls and stuff like that. And then I come out to the ball game too, and I don't volunteer anything.
Well, if they ask you, you can answer, but it's you're your own boss now. It's great.
You're right, because I'll tell you what, I have this is ironic. Six of the scouts were in spring training this year, and one guy is Buddy Kerr. You've heard of him?
Sure.
He turned around and he says, "John, were you in spring training this past year?" And I had to laugh. Bracey and Ryan and Yoakum says, "God Almighty, he gave you the tickets." And he said, "Oh, yeah." He said, "I'm getting forgetful. I'm 70 years old." I said, "What the hell? I'm 78. And I said, "You're 70. He looks like he's 85.
Well, some of us don't wear as good as others. Hey, go back to your playing time with Washington. That outfield you had there was a fantastic outfield.
Oh, hell, we could run. Oh.
If you could run, you could hit. I mean, that was probably as good an outfield as there was in the major leagues at that time.
That's right. Well, I'll say this. The best outfield, I thought, in my time, we had a good outfield. We could carry our glove with anybody, any place.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with DiMaggio and Selkirk that first year, and I'm just trying to think of the left fielder they had over there.
Well, Keller. No, the Keller. That was Keller's or later.
It didn't come into later. '99. It was.
I say Henrik was there for a while.
Henrik was there for a while. Yeah. But he didn't play left field. He played right field.
Myrl Hoag was there for a while. Jake Powell.
Powell came after.
Did he?
Yeah, because Powell was. I mean, not after. He was before me. Jake Powell was before me.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think it was Merle Hoag.
Yeah, he was there. I know he was there for a while. I don't remember exactly when, but he was about that time.
Because, see, Rolf was the